those of you who are listening, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz, and we'll be here for the next hour on conservative... Nope, sorry, that's wrong. It is now 94.5 WGTK, The Answer. So I need to change this little thing in here. Bring a little note card. Change that thing. Make a note, and I'll give that to station management Monday morning. Oh, me. What a difference a week makes. Man alive, what a difference a week makes. You know, last weekend I made it through. it was difficult. And to get through with tax season. And then, of course, when you're worn out, you don't think straight. And being a fisherman, you really don't think straight. So what did I do? I committed to getting up at 6 o'clock Tuesday morning, and we got in the old 1991 Ford F-150 and drove to Silva, North Carolina, trout fished all day, had a ball. Kevin, if you're listening, I really waxed you this time, buddy. I'm sorry. I caught way more than you did. But we both caught a lot. We're probably in a 50 or 60 fish day. We just quit counting. I mean, why count when you're catching that many? We caught some good fish too. I caught two brook trout, probably went 18 inches each. There were some. It was, and I tell you, if you're going to fish, get you a good pair of glasses, sunglasses. I was standing. It was funny. It was an outside bend, and the fish, instead of being on the far outer edge of the current, the fish were holding right on the inside edge, right on the gravel bar. I mean, you know, normally when you fish, you swing and let it run all the way out to that outer edge, and that's where the fish are hanging, kind of on the back end of that. But these fish were hanging all along that inside gravel edge. So you weren't fishing very far from where you were standing in the water. And I was standing there and having good Costa sunglasses on, you know, with, I think those are 580 lenses. You know, you can see just amazingly into that. Once you get ripples on top, you lose that. When it's flat, calm on top, you can see it. So the inside of this stretch was calm and flat. And I was sitting there and I saw this trout swim up from out of the deeper water. And he sat there just kind of depression behind a rock. And I was like, well, that's a good trout. And I had on probably a number 10 golden stonefly. Flipped it up probably 15 feet in front of him. Current just right, carried it just a little bit to my side of him. And as it came by, probably got 12, 15 inches in front of him, popped around that rock in front of him. He turned towards me and I watched him open his mouth and suck it in. And I was like, really? Can we hit this on video, please? And it was a good trout, a good brook trout. And we had a great day. You know, almost got nailed by the release on the Tuckasegee twice. They weren't supposed to release at all. I was up this little fork. It forked and went around a little island. I was up on the other side of the island and started seeing a little trash in the water. And I was like, well, where's all this coming from? Unless Kevin's in front of me fishing. I fish for a minute and this piece of firewood comes drifting by. And we're not talking a little small piece. We're talking like 16 inch piece of cut firewood comes floating by. And I'm like, yeah, this is not good. By the time phone rang, Kevin goes, I think they've opened the gate. So I didn't actually swim. I was thinking I was going to have to swim the Tuckasegee to get back to the other side of the road. So, but it caught us both times. It came up. It caught us on the other side of the river. And it was second time. I'm glad I was about 6 inches taller than Kevin because he was having a tough time getting across. But anyway, you know, go fishing. It is just, it's just so much fun. And a day on the river like that with the different sounds of the water, I know I've talked about it before, but trout fishing, just something about the, you know, the roars of a plunge and then the quiet water, and it just revives your soul. I can promise you it does that. Let's get to that. I got a few things for the calendar here today. Before I get to that, if you're at all interested, the Bassmaster Elite are up at Bull Shoals, Norfolk, which is Mountain Home, Arkansas, and local pro Casey Ashley is in 29th after 2 days. Now he can make the cut at 50 to fish tomorrow, but he's got to be in the top 12 to fish Sunday. So that's pretty good for him. I don't think anybody else from around here made it. Nope. But anyway, the weigh-in is it starts at 5 o'clock today. You can watch it live on Bassmaster.com. If you like the sheep's head fish, the 24th annual sheep's head tournament sponsored by the CIA, that's the Charleston Inshore Anglers, is Saturday, April 30th, 6 a.m. to 5 p.m., $30 entry fee, $20 for active military. Based on 140 anglers, they're going to pay out $1,000 for the first place sheep's head, $500 for second, third's $200, fourth's $125. They're paying out to 10th place, so that's a good one. For more information, actually, the best place to find this is at charlestonfishing.com. They have a local tournaments and community events forum on there, and you can find it there. But that's the CIA Charleston Sheep's Head Tournament. Blue Wall Birding Festival. This is from South Carolina State Parks. This is May the 12th through May the 15th. It's Table Rock State Park. This is a tour. Some of the best bird watching hotspots in the upstate as spring migration is winding down. Experienced birders will guide small groups to a variety of habitats within the mountains and upper Piedmont. Table Rock State Park is the hub for the multi-day event. Trip choices for Friday and Saturday. Nine Times Preserve in the East Otoe Valley. Two Townville Lake Hartwell Clemson area. Three Ashmore, Chandler, and Bunched Arrowhead Heritage Preserves. Four is Table Rock and Mountain Bridge Wilderness. So these are like guided little excursions to see all the birding activity. You can find more information at the South Carolina State Parks website. The National Wild Turkey Federation, Mountain Lake Sportsman's Dinner, Hunting Heritage Banquet, May the 14th, Pickens County Recreation Center. That's at 1234 Pickens Street. Can't beat that. You can go to the National Wild Turkey Federation website. Click on South Carolina events near you, and you'll find this one and more. This is just one of many banquets the National Wild Turkey Federation has every year right here in our state of South Carolina. Camping 101. Now, would you believe this? This is from Palmetto Conservation Foundation. Just like we talked about fishing 101 last week, this is Camping 101, and this is going to take place on Tuesdays, May the 17th, 24th, 31st, and on Saturday, June the 4th. You're invited to join the Palmetto Conservation Foundation for Camping 101 at the Backpacker. And you can learn everything you need to get started in the great outdoors during this four-week course. From setting up your tent to which cookware is right for the job, camping can be intimidating, but after learning the ropes in Camping 101, you'll be on your way to mastering the outdoors. Let Camping 101 help you make 2016 your best outdoor adventure yet. You can go to Palmetto Conservation, I think it's pcf.org, and find some more information about Camping 101. And then here's a good one. I met these people down at Siwi. They just got a lot going on. And this is just one of them. The fourth annual Bulls Bay Nature Festival, from the forest to the sea, Saturday, May 21st from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. It takes place at Siwi Center, Awandon, various locations around that area. For everyone, they're going to have photography workshops, native plant and wildlife walks, kayaking and paddleboarding, sweetgrass basketry, Hampton Plantation tours. That was the home place of Archibald Rutledge, I believe. Oh, could be wrong on that one. Live wolves, predators, and raptors. For the kids, have archery, fishing, pond and marsh explorations, nature art, nature crafts, face painting, and more. Event registration begins May the 2nd. You'll need to call the Siwi Center at 843-928-3368 or visit www.bullsbaynaturefestival.org. Tony Mills, keynote speaker, live animal demonstration plus video clips of his SCETV show, Coastal Kingdom. So there's just a few things to get you out there and involved. Met another organization while I was at Siwi. That's the Orion Society. And we're going to be joined by Dr. Chris Jenkins here after the break. So hang on and learn a little about snakes and amphibians. So we lost Prince this week. You know, I think life, as we get older, our lives are marked by certain milestones. And I think Purple Rain was one pretty much all of us can go back to. Pretty good music in that song, in that movie. But, you know, I was at Seaway this past year, and there was a tent there, and they had this snake that looked like it came right out of Africa, and it didn't. It was actually the Eastern Indigo snake. I talked to the folks there at the tent. It was the Orion Society. They're right down the street in Georgia. And we're joined by Dr. Chris Jenkins. Thank you for taking time out of your Saturday to be on Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Hey, Roger. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, sir. I would sit here and read your bio, but it's, I mean, doctorate. You went to University of Massachusetts, wildlife biology and conservation, PhD in biological sciences from Idaho State, work with the Wildlife Conservation, U.S. Forest Service. I mean, if it's out there, you've done it, right?
No, I guess you could say that. I've been around a lot, working on snakes all over the world. So,
well, tell us take a moment and tell us about the Orion Society and what you do there and what y'all's mission is, and then we got some specifics I'd like to go into a little bit later on.
Yeah, that sounds good. So, Orion Society, we're a nonprofit wildlife research and conservation organization. I founded the organization back in 2008, and we're based in Georgia. We're based at the University of Georgia, and we do a lot of our work kind of in partnership with faculty and students there. Some of my staff, including myself, you know, we serve as adjunct faculty there, so we can work with students, et cetera.
Sure.
But the organization is really focused on, you know, the conservation of a group of animals that most people have forgotten, or most people don't think about too much, or when they do, oftentimes, you know, they might have kind of a negative connotation.
Yeah.
We work to, you know, to conserve reptiles and amphibians, so animals such as snakes, turtles, alligators, amphibians such as salamanders and frogs, and we do a variety of things from protecting land, managing habitats. Again, I already mentioned research. We do a lot of conservation planning, working with state and government agencies. So really kind of a diverse approach, but it's all rooted in science and real kind of boots on the ground conservation, if you will. We don't do things such as advocacy or lobbying. It's all, you know, action, things such as burning the forest and, you know, buying land, those types of things.
You know, you mentioned several things that I could just rabbit trail with, but the last one, burning forest, you know, March here in South Carolina was Control Burn Month. And we do a lot of it here, and people don't realize the benefits of controlled burning. It's just something that's lost on them.
Certainly. It's critically important, not just for reptiles and amphibians, but a whole suite of wildlife, you know, from the non-game species like snakes all the way up to, you know, a lot of the game species that a lot of us, you know, love to go out and hunt for. So yeah. It's critically important. These ecosystems, you know, in a lot of the Southeast, especially in the coastal plain, I mean, these historically would have burned relatively frequently.
Yes. Now we do it controlled and all, but it's amazing the benefits to everything that a burn has. And you're putting carbon back into the soil, so it benefits the trees and the plants and everything else too, and the wildlife.
Certainly.
You mentioned habitat. What's the, and snakes especially, you know, when you said they forget it, but people mostly think about snakes in a fearful way, but snakes have a great role in the ecosystem and nature and all that. Why do they live with such a target on their them all the time?
That's a very good question, but you could put snakes high up there on the list with other things such as, say, spiders and sharks, that the things that people oftentimes have these innate or these learned, you know, fear, yeah, you know, associated with. I mean, by far the majority of people I interact with, you know, come to that communication with a fear of snakes. In terms of why we have it, you know, I mean, there's, I mean, it goes back. I mean, you can go all the way back to the Bible and see, you know, Adam and Eve and the snake. So a lot of it's learned, but, you know, we do think there's a genetic component to it as well. So if you look at things such as primates, naive primates, so primates that have never interacted with a snake in their life have an innate fear.
Really?
They know to be careful, you know, because a snake's a predator.
Sure.
And, you know, historically, humans probably lived with much larger snakes than we have today, snakes that could potentially eat us. So,
you know, I've been guilty of this, I guess, when my children were smaller. But, you know, I grew up in the country, and my goodness, we had, there wasn't probably a 3 or 4 days where we didn't catch a black snake or a green snake. We had a pond, which means we had water moccasins. There were a few copperheads around. And, you know, we kind of just gave each other a wide berth. Why is it, you know, it's important to know a snake, be able to identify your snakes so you know which ones. But even one, black snakes and king snakes you may see in your backyard around your house, they're there for a reason. They're serving a purpose. What would those be?
Yeah, well, first thing I'd say is I'd use the analogy you may have heard of the airplane. You know what I mean? You can take a couple parts off of an airplane,
sure,
and it'll probably still fly. You take too many off, it's going to crash. And so, you know, snakes are part of that airplane, if you will. I mean, snakes are an important part of a very complex ecosystem. And in particular, if you think about it in that ecological perspective, snakes, all snakes are predators of some type, you know. So in this part of the world, if you think of some of the species we've been talking about, things such as, you know, your rattlesnakes and cottonmouths and things like that, they're oftentimes rodent eaters, for example. So, you know, you could think of them like raptors, some of the hawks that you see. They're an important kind of mid-size carnivore living in our forests, and they play a role feeding on, you know, rodents that live in the environment, rodents that can cause us a lot of trouble from time
yes
to time in our houses or in our agricultural fields. So,
and if you listen to some of the news reports, some of the major cities are just eating up with rats.
Oh, certainly.
Well, okay, snakes are probably the ones that you get the most feedback and interest in, but you've got turtles and there's salamanders, and I love to trout fish, and there's some of those in those rivers I go into. What are some of the benefits they provide for us? What are their roles in the ecosystem?
Well, I mean, it varies significantly, but if you take, you know, salamanders, you know, I live up in trout country. I live up in the Blue Ridge, and
yeah,
trout fish myself right on the Chattooga there on the border between Georgia and South Carolina. And salamanders are critically important. So first of all, the region we live in, including the upstate of South Carolina, it is the global biodiversity hotspot in the entire world for salamander diversity, meaning we live in the most diverse place anywhere on the planet.
Wow.
So first of all, salamanders in the region we live in is critically important from a biodiversity perspective and makes us really special. Salamanders are also carnivores for the most part. They're feeding more on invertebrates, but they're also, you know, they're prey for a lot of species. So they're kind of lower on that food chain. But again, they provide an important link. And being as biodiverse as I mentioned, they likely make up probably the highest biomass or one of the highest biomasses of any animal in, you know, this part of the world. So you can imagine how important of a food source they are for all kinds of things. From, you know, I was out turkey hunting this morning, for example.
Okay.
And I'm certain that turkeys, you know, feed on salamanders from time to time. So all of these things are linked, whether we're talking about a salamander, a turtle, a snake, and they're all important. And we just need to find, you know, room for having all of these animals that we care about. So they're all important.
You know, if you go to the website, which is oriensociety.org, you've got some initiatives listed there. We talked about the fire, the prescribed burning, Appalachian Highlands, which is what we were just talking about, the salamanders, the ecosystem, and all, and then the citizen science. And we got about 2.5 minutes left. It's amazing how quick time flies. Which one of those is one of your most important? Go ahead.
I guess I'd focus on the, you know, what we call our Fire Forest Initiative or our Longleaf Pine Savanna Initiative, which is our southeastern coastal plain, which includes, you know, a large portion of South Carolina,
sure,
you know, the low country there. And that's kind of how our organization started, working in that ecosystem. And we work to conserve a whole variety of the rare species you'd find there, things such as gopher tortoises, eastern indigo snakes, eastern diamondback rattlesnakes. And we do a lot of work from, you know, as you mentioned, prescribed fire, land protection. We're just really focused in that area because in North America, there are probably, it's one of the places that has the most endangered reptiles in anywhere across North America. So it's a really important place to work.
You know, I know DNR has done some eastern diamondback tracking down at the Webb Center and all. What's do you know much about those studies? How's the eastern diamondback doing down in those parts of the country?
Well, in that particular area you're talking about, I think is probably one of the better strongholds in the state of South Carolina. They have declined across their range. I'd say the core of their range is really Georgia and Florida, and South Carolina to some degree on the fringes, you know, places like North Carolina and Mississippi, they're on the verge of going extinct, and they have declined everywhere. They've been petitioned for endangered species status, and the Fish and Wildlife Service actually had us do the work, at least in Georgia and Florida, to look at their status. So we've just been studying the snake to determine how well their populations are doing, giving that information to the federal government so they can make a decision. And I would say in Georgia and Florida, their populations are doing relatively well. I know in South Carolina that they're much more patchily distributed. They've declined probably more significantly than they have probably in Georgia and Florida. But there's still a good number of them out on the landscape.
Very good. Well, like I said, time flies. We're at the end of it. I'd love to have you back on a little bit later on to talk some more.
Anytime.
Well, Dr. Jenkins, I appreciate you coming on. The website is OrientSociety.org. You can sponsor through your website, correct?
You can, yeah. We are a nonprofit. We run on donations, so get on there and support us.
Thank you, sir, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Hang on through, and we'll be back on the other side of the break.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Oh no, let's go! Don't lie. The world we're living in. Take a look around. At least you got friends.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Dave's had fun with the Prince clips over the last couple days, I think. That was Super Bowl, right? Oh yeah. You were having a discussion about why. Some of my friends and I were having a discussion about why it means anything to us that Prince died. But I guess it was, like I said, it's a mile marker in life. 1984 was Purple Rain. And I can't remember. I don't know if I saw it or not or just remember it or what. But anyway, that's what happens with age. Speaking of age, and I'm not saying anything about you, Larry, we're joined by Woodrow Ross, who is not only a neighbor of mine, he's a media colleague. How's that intro for you?
That sounds good to me.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. You having a good day?
I think so. Show's going fairly well today, and actually got a day out and went trout fishing Tuesday and caught a bunch of trout. So, you know, it's been a good week.
Sounds like life is good.
It is good. It's amazing how good it gets after April 15th.
That's right. Yesterday was full moon. I should have been out trying to catch some shell crackers.
You know, I spent yesterday afternoon putting new line on some rods and reels for my dad, mom and dad, and they were going to go this morning and didn't go and said they're going to go tomorrow morning. I'm thinking, you know, tomorrow afternoon I might have to go find some myself. They'll still be around those beds tomorrow afternoon, won't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go try to check them out on Monday.
There you go. Yeah, that first full moon in late April, 1st of May, is when all those shell crackers and brim go to the bed, and that is just a bunch of fun to catch, and just one after another, really.
Nothing better than a fly rod and brim bed.
There you go. Well, I wanted to get you on because and we'll talk about you and all that you do here in just a few minutes, but you're last year you did this. You're doing it again this year. Salute River Archery has summer archery camps, and you're participating, doing outdoor skills and also just And we're coming into summer camp time when parents need to be thinking about getting those kids outside for a week, if it's a full-time week camp or just a day camp. So tell us what you're going to be doing at Saluda River Archery this summer, Woodrow.
Okay. It is a day camp, and it's actually for the entire month of June, and it's 1 week for participants. There's 12 each week. So that would be like June 6th through the 10th, and then June 13th through the 17th, June 20th through the 24th, and June 21st, 27th through July the 1st.
Okay.
So that'd be 12 to 10 days a week. And it's a morning camp, 9 to 11:30. And Saluda River covers basic archery instructions. They'll have attendees shooting recurve bows at a lot of fun target.
Okay.
They'll be given all kind of, you know, safety instructions, the whole ball of wax. And that can be novice archers or intermediate archers, you know, that have already been shooting some. But it's a lot of fun. And then on one day a week, there'll be a representative there from DNR, and they'll go over water safety, conservation, law enforcement, and they'll have a patrol boat there that the students can actually get in and check it out, see what's involved in the patrol boat.
Okay.
And then one day a week, I will be there, and I'll do basic outdoor skills. We'll do a lot of fun stuff like fire starting with a bow drill, flint napping, addle demonstration and instruction, and demonstration with Cherokee blow gun, and a lot of just information about survival skills and camping skills, just anything related to the outdoors. So it'll be a lot of fun. We've had really good participation. The camps have been sold out. They've had it the last 4 years, and I've been there for 3 years during that time, and it's been real interesting. The kids are real involved, and we do a lot of hands-on stuff, so it's always a lot of fun for the kids.
And that's what you got to do with the kids. You got to get them involved. They can't sit back and just listen. You got to get them hands-on and active to keep their attention.
That's true. I hear a lot of talk about the kids nowadays are more involved in social media and games and so on and so forth. But, you know, a lot of that goes back to the parents not involving kids in outdoor activities. And I found, you know, at these camps and other seminars that I do, I have found that kids are interested. You know, they love learning about the outdoors and about how to start fires with a bow drill and flint napping, and all of these things are interesting. But they just the problem is exposure. Most
yes.
of them have never been exposed to these things.
Yeah, it's up to the parents to make time in their schedules to get the kids out. You know, when you and I were coming along, you know, we left after morning chores were done, and, you know, if we came back by supper time, all was good, you know?
That's right. We had a lot of country, and, you know, I'd take off and go fishing sometimes, spend the day fishing by myself when I was just a young child.
Yeah, but in today's age, you can't do that, so it falls more to the parent to make the effort and the time to get these kids to these events, because kids are... I think kids, even with the social media, the technology and all that, kids on a basic level still will soak up whatever you expose them to.
That's exactly right. And they do have that interest. You know, people think they're not interested, but, you know, when you put it out there and you make them a part of it, then they really are interested. They have a lot of questions. They're interested in learning new things.
Well, I'm sorry, I had to cut you off. Go ahead.
I was just going to say any youngster or adult that's interested in signing up their kid, and I don't know if I said it's ages 7 to 14, but anyone interested in signing up could go on saluteriverarchery.com and find the registration sheet and the information and so forth. It's $150 for a week. And it's a week well spent. You know, the kids learn a lot, and it's exciting for them. And I have a good time too, just meeting the new people and being involved.
I'm sure you do. It's it's a fulfilling event for you, I'm sure.
It is. It is. I always enjoy being able to share. You know, you mentioned my age or age in general in the introduction. And, you know, I've been around a few years, and I have learned a few things. And I've always enjoyed hunting and fishing. But the last 7-8 years, I've become more and more involved in outdoor and survival skills and learning to do these things. And it just opened a lot of doors and a lot of interesting topics for me.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of a, I don't know. I mean, you do a little bit of everything. I mean, not many people know how to do flint knapping, or write books. I mean, you got several books out there.
Yeah, I've got about, I think 14 or 15 books on Amazon Kindle, and I've got one that's, well, I actually had two in print, but one of those I've converted over to Amazon Kindle, and actually it's done real well. It's called, Fly Rods, Good Dogs, and Straight Shooting Guns. And it was a little overpriced in print version, but it's only $3.99 on Amazon Kindle. And it had really done well. I sold those in the U.S., Canada, Australia, Italy. It's amazing the interest. And in the number one book, I would never believe, my wife still can't believe this, The one that I sold the most of last few years has been Introduction to Flint Knapping.
Really?
And it's amazing. And I sell a lot of these in the UK and in the US and a few other places. But it's amazing to me the interest that there is in flint knapping. It's sort of a niche subject, but it's amazing. I really need to do an advanced version of this and get it online.
Well, since you brought it up, you got about a minute to go. There are a lot of people out there probably scratching their head going, what is flint knapping? So take a minute and tell us what flint knapping is.
Okay. Well, one of the easiest things to flint knap is obsidian, which is a glass-like rock. It's a volcanic rock. And you use a billet or a little club to strike it in a particular way, and it knocks flakes off. And they're usually what's called conchoidal fractures. You take these flakes, and then you can percussion nap and shape it to the rough shape of an arrowhead or spear point. And then you take pressure flaking, which can be the tip of an antler, or it can be a copper inserted into a handle. And you do the flaking to do the final steps to sharpen it and make the notches to attach it to an arrow shell. So it's an ancient art that's been, it's amazing how many people today are interested in participating in flint knapping. If you go online, you can just find tons of information and YouTube videos showing how to flint knap. So it's a widely accepted topic now.
Well, very good. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. It's the first time, and I promise it won't be the last. And,
I appreciate it, and I enjoy it very much, and look forward to hearing you again, and if we'd love to participate again in the future.
Very good. I'll try to make it down for a week at camp while you're going to be there. Maybe you can teach me how to flint knap, too.
I hear you, man. All right. Take care.
Take care of yourself. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back on the other side to break.
I swear he wouldn't mind. Hell, we'll just shoot the lock off.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's last segment. It just, oh, man. One of these days I'm going to have to go 2 hours. Co-host, though. I have to have a co-host. I couldn't stay awake for 2 hours some days. Let's see. Took a look at Bass Track. Casey has fallen from 29th to 47th. And Davey Height, who is from South Carolina, is sitting in 29th. So, be interesting. They're doing a little something different, Bassmaster, on this tournament. They're fishing two different lakes. They fished, they fished one lake Thursday. They're fishing another lake today, yesterday and today. And then, tomorrow's final 12 will fish on the lake they fished on Thursday. So it's kind of a little different scenario, which we'll see how that plays out and then what the guys think about that. I mentioned this. probably a month ago, maybe a little over a month ago now, just at the very end of the show, in passing, because I didn't have but a couple of minutes. But, yeah, yesterday was Earth Day, and, you know, I know a lot of people got outside and whatever you do on Earth Day. You need to thank a hunter, fisherman, archer, canoeist for all that. If you went out and got out on in some federal or state owned lands and enjoyed everything, because it's us, the hunters, the fishermen, that, pay all the money that allows everybody to get out there and enjoy the outdoors, especially in some of these state managed and federal managed lands. 1.1 billion is what all those aforementioned people paid in 2015 in taxes based on Pittman Robertson and Dingell Johnson. And that's being returned to the states to use at the state level. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is doling out $1.1 billion to the states in the 2016 fiscal year. The funds were generated by the Pittman Robertson Wildlife Restoration and Dingell Johnson Sport Fish Restoration Acts and will go towards conservation efforts within each state. You know, I did a real long program on Pittman Robertson one year. I won't go back through all of it, but it's an excise tax. That it's two sets. Pittman Robertson is from the sale of hunting equipment, and Dingell Johnson is from fishing. The percentage of money paid by the hunting, boating, and angling industry is on firearms, bows, ammunition, which is Pittman Robertson, and sport fishing tackle, some boat engines, and small engine fuel. Dingell Johnson helps pay for research, management, and enforcement performed the various fish and wildlife agencies across the country. And I have talked to people down at Department of Natural Resources, and this, the money they get from Pittman Robertson every year pretty much keeps South Carolina afloat. The money they get from the state legislature is not near enough to do what they do, and face it, everybody will admit it, it's underfunded as it is. But South Carolina will get $9.3 million from Pittman Robertson, and it's doled out to the states based on license sales. $9.3 million from Pittman Robertson, $5 million from Dingell Johnson, so $14.3 million will come back to the state of South Carolina to be used in wildlife and fisheries, conservation efforts, education, research. I know one of the biggest examples from the 2014 year, which would have been doled out in 2015, is the Palmetto Shooting Complex down at the National Wild Turkey Federation. NWTF was going to build this facility. It was going to be private. They were going to make it a destination shooting thing, but it was not going to be where you or I could walk up and say, I want to go shoot around in Sporting Clays. Percentages of money given back to the states have to be spent on certain things. And about $3 million in 2015 was earmarked for, I guess, what you'd call shooting sports or shooting facilities. Well, South Carolina Department of Natural Resources didn't have facilities that needed huge upgrades. They didn't want to build a facility that would cost them money in maintenance and upkeep going down the road. So they actually, National Wild Turkey Federation, got a hold of them and said, hey, look, don't send that money back. Don't not spend it. Why don't we partner together and build this facility, and we'll open it to the public, and it will be a public shooting facility. And it's an incredible thing. I mean, Ryan Bass will be on here in a couple of weeks to talk about the high school shooting sports. And he'll tell you firsthand how beneficial it has been to have Palmetto Shooting Complex, because that's where the tournaments have been held. So when you get out there and you're enjoying, I'm not saying, I don't know, I don't wear this as a badge of honor, but it is the truth. We pay it for everybody to enjoy it. So just keep that in mind when you're out there doing what you're doing in the outdoors. And in addition to that, Harry Hampton Wildlife Fund, Harry Hampton, the Wildlife Memorial Fund, is a private nonprofit corporation, partners with the Natural Resources Promotion of Natural Resources and Education, conservation, wildlife, marine, and other resources here in the state. And its funds are attained solely through private donations, promotional projects. They have fundraising events like banquets and all. And they donated $149,000 to DNR on March the 18th of this year. The mission of the Hampton Wildlife Fund is to support DNR in its role as stewards of this state's vast natural resources. We thank the many who so generously support our fundraising efforts, allow us to help fund DNR's great work in the Palmetto State, said Jim Goller. Jim's been on here the show before. He's a great guy. He is executive director and a DNR retiree. So we'll have a little bit of money here in the state to spend on wildlife this year. Last week we had Sarah Chabain on about the fishing rodeos and all, and I didn't go through and tell you where these were going to be. Let's see, we're actually through a couple of them. Upcoming fishing rodeos, Blue Heron on April 30th, May 7th, Lake Thickety, May 7th at Cross State Park, which is going to be a really nice one. I saw a blurb about them, and you can, if you're on Facebook, you know somebody on Facebook, there's a Woods and Water Outdoor Events page. And I try to keep things rolling through there that you can go see. And I noticed this one put it up there. But if you're out there, you've got a wild game dinner, you've got a conservation dinner, you've got a fishing tournament, a group hike, anything outdoor related, you're welcome to post those into that page. I'm going to be working on that to get that expanded and hopefully get some more people involved on that side. But Cross State Park is having a big one. Star Fort Pond. There's going to be one in Goose Creek on May the 14th. The Cohen Campbell Fish Hatchery is having one on the 14th. Piedmont Tree Nursery, which is here in the upstate, is going to have one on May 14th. Bulls Bay, May 21st. Draper, which is in York County on May the 21st. Horry County Rodeo is going to be on June 4th. Seawee Center is going to have one on June the 11th. The Shiraus Fish Hatchery is going to have one on September the 24th. And Socastee is going to have one on April the 8th. Now, they got the family fishing clinics that they have scheduled. The next one is going to be May the 21st. They've got one in Fort Mill, South Carolina, Sun City Grandparents Park. Lexington Wildlife Chapter is having one the same day. June the 4th, the Watery Heritage Preserve. June 18th, Sun City Grandparents Park in Fort Mill and the Lexington Wildlife Center. They run all the way into August and September. You can find more about those on the Department of Natural Resources Aquatic Ed page. And like we talked about, if you want to learn how to fish, you can schedule one for your group. Let's see. Boater education. I want to run through this, and I'm going to let this kind of be the last little bit. You know, I talked about it before. Boater education. If you're going to be out there this summer, you got a boat, you got a jet ski. Boaters under 16 years of age are required by law to pass an approved boater education course before operating without supervision a personal watercraft, call that a jet ski, or a boat powered by 15 horsepower or more. Now, that's all I'm going to say about that because we've got somebody coming on to talk more about boater safety and all that. But there, not only is it boater education, but there's ramp etiquette. There's rules of the road, and some of you can't, you just got to experience to know how much people need this. And I hate to dump on kayakers, but, you know, a boat ramp is not the place to set your kayak up. You know, you can carry it off to the side. Just be respectful of other people. And you say that and you're thinking, well, okay, that sounds easy enough, but you know, treat others as you'd want them to treat you. You know, you wouldn't be sitting there launching a boat and have somebody taking the boat ramp up. So that's all I'm not going to jump on anybody. I'm not going to be negative, but just be aware. Hopefully we will have someone on to talk about, boating safety, the importances, some of the rules of the road. And you know, a power squadron course is not a bad thing to take for those of us who have boats. It's just information. And the more you know, the better able you're to handle situations. Some of the gear you might not think about you need that, you know, like spots and personal locators and that sort of thing. So just stay tuned. We're going to have some more on that. Like I said, trout fishing is wide open right now. We were on the tuck. I know they've been releasing trout all across North Carolina, all across South Carolina, the Chattooga River. You heard, Chris Jenkins talk about the Chattooga River. You know, trout fishing is not as hard as it seems to get into. I mean, one of my high school friends, her son taught her to trout fish this past weekend. So you can do it at any age, and it's not prohibitive. It costs a little bit of money, but you can get into it relatively inexpensive, and it's just another way you can get out on the water. That's the way you have to look at it. Let's see. Haven't done a Chuck Norris in a while. So, let's see. Chuck Norris doesn't read books. He stares them down until he gets the information he needs. I'm glad my voice seems to be back. It had to have been just the pollen. Anyway, good show today. Appreciate you listening. Make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. It's a great time of the year to be on the back roads of South Carolina. And don't forget that camera. I'll see you again here next Saturday at 3:00.